So I wanted to talk tonight about waking up with everyday inconvenience. And first I want to talk about, you know, the three types of suffering. And probably many of you who have been practicing for a long time are familiar with this. But the three types of suffering, first is dukkha-dukkha, which is the suffering of suffering, or also the physical and emotional suffering we have from having a body. Pain, sickness, old age, and death. So, and then viparinima dukkha is the suffering of change. And of course, as we know, change is constant and inevitable. This is part of being human, the suffering of change. And then there is sankhara dukkha, and that's primarily what I'm going to focus on tonight. And that's the everyday suffering that we often don't even notice. It's so baked in. It's often the little things that happen during the day, often going unseen and unaddressed. And yet, although sankhara dukkha is considered the suffering that we often don't notice, it's also considered the best chance for us to wake up because it is happening so much of the time. It's those little gaps, like when something doesn't quite go right, or we expect it to go this way and it goes that way. It's those little gaps of expectation and result and how those things don't always meet together. And the constant little moments of not meeting what we expect. Of course, as humans, we have expectations, but because life is unpredictable, there's endless moments that life goes in a different direction. You know, we could look at dukkha as unreliability or inconstancy. That's another translation of dukkha. And so how do we engage with that? You know, in other words, engaging with that in a way that really can help us wake up. And first, I want to say, in order to do these practices, of course, we need some stability in this life. We need basic things to rely on, a home, adequate money to take care of basic needs, safety, health, if we can have it. There are people in war zones and in poverty who are in a constant state of instability. And so this is not so easy. However, for those of us who have at least some stability, this sankhara dukkha, to engage in this is really the opportunity to look at all the ways in which the mind moves in a different direction from the reality of this, like we're in a little argument with reality. And I think about some of y'all probably remember years ago, Al Gore had a documentary, a well-known documentary on climate change called An Inconvenient Truth. And so inconvenient climate change is at the very least inconvenient. And since then, I would say it is not just inconvenient, it is becoming deadly in some cases. It has really become more and more severe. So what started out is perhaps seen as inconvenient is much more than that. And of course, sickness and old age and death are inconvenient in a bigger way. But what is inconvenient in your life on an everyday basis? What takes you out of your expected routine? Where's the gap? Maybe traffic jams at an interstate, or something, a person you were expecting to hear from that you didn't hear back from, or somebody being late. You know, all these little things that are happening through our lives create this inconvenience and then create this sankhara dukkha. And so I remember a few years ago, I was going to the grocery store and I was taking my usual route through an intersection, and there's a large street in Nashville called Hillsborough Road. And I was cutting across from a small street and I saw the light turn green and I went across the street, got about halfway through the street, and my car was hit hard and it started spinning and it started feeling like it was going to tip over. And fortunately, it didn't. It came back upright and it didn't hit a curb. And I sat there for a moment, and somebody drove up next to me, and he said, I witnessed all of that. And I said, I thought I had the green light. I guess I didn't. And he said, oh, yes, you had the green light. The person in the other car just ran the red light and was going very fast. And so she stopped. And so we had to stop. We had to take maybe a couple of hours to fill out all the paperwork. Neither of us were hurt. Thankfully, she was very upset. She was crying. And so I went up and talked to her and made her feel better because she was very young. She was in her early 20s. And I'd been through something like that before about her age. But it was like the inconvenience. You know, I was just going to the grocery store and all of a sudden I was hit. And I had to, my car was totaled. I had to get a new car. Now, thankfully, the insurance company was generous. They gave me a nice settlement to get a decent car. She was honest. You know, it's like it wasn't a catastrophe. It could have been, but it wasn't. Ultimately, it was kind of like a major inconvenience. And it was something I was able to meet and let go of. It didn't hold on. The only thing the way it affected me going forward is whenever I go to an intersection now and I have a green light, I do look a little more carefully to make sure nobody's running the light. But other things can be much more mundane. Like we had somebody coming, our electric service came and cut this brush around a rotting shed by our next door neighbor. And so now with the rotting shed and the junk pile became totally visible to us. And so my husband and I were upset. You know, it's like, wait, now we have this ugly shed that we have to see. Well, that sounds pretty mundane in a way. And yet those are the kinds of things where that Sankara Dukkha shows up, these moments where things gap from what we expect them to be. And waking up to that, seeing, this is Sankara Dukkha. This is that point of being inconvenienced by something. You know, this is a moment of suffering, but a moment that we can wake up. And I think it's important to really see that because, as Ajahn Chah said, it's the suffering we pay attention to and look at that allows us to become free. And so how do we do that? How do we keep paying attention and cultivating those moments of inconvenience, those moments of seeing that inconvenience, saying, this is it. This is it. And so recently, my husband and I did a remodel on our home, and we had to move out for almost a year. And I won't go into all the disasters that happened. I don't even want to go there right now. But when we came back, the house wasn't finished. And we were living with construction. The house was a construction site. We lived with that for a couple of months of literally having people in our house all day long, every single day. I had nowhere to go except this one room, my office. And if any of you have had that experience of having people in your house and living in construction site, you know it can really disrupt your routines, right? I mean, talk about inconvenience. It starts to become, it's like my nervous system, you know, was a little jangled because I couldn't relax. My husband and I couldn't really relax. And what I would do was I would try to meditate in the midst of all the hammering and all of the disruptions. And I found sometimes that I would be a little less settled than I normally would be. And yet I found that in sitting there, I started to look at those moments, those hooks. You know, in the Tibetan tradition, they call it the shempa. It's the hook. And often that hook is a very everyday type hook, a hook of reaction, a hook of action that isn't helpful. And when that arises, to refrain. You know, we have a teaching in Buddhism, and Buddha taught us when these arisings, these conditioned arisings come, that we refrain. If we have enough mindfulness and awareness, we refrain from reacting. We renounce our attachment to the comfort or the ideas about how it should be in that moment. And so renunciation isn't just going off to a cave and, you know, becoming a monastic. Renunciation is renouncing our attachment to our ideas about how it should be. And I'm not talking here about ideas about injustice or climate change, the areas where we need to really engage. So I'm talking about our attachment to comfort and the ideas, the everyday ways that we think this is how it should be, this is how it should be. So what happened to me while I was meditating is that hook came up and I was holding it in awareness. And in that moment, I could just accept a distracted sit. And then as I accepted the distracted sit, there was a refrain and a renunciation from the hooks. And then slowly, the practice crossed the threshold into the actual dharma of being settled, of being present, of being fully aware and fully awake. And so even in a moment like that, there was the opportunity in the practice to be able to come back. And it wasn't easy, and it was kind of exhausting. And honestly, we, at the end of a couple of months, we wound up taking a short trip to Colorado to visit our family. And when we came back, we both had COVID. And we told the final carpenter who was still on the job that we had COVID. And he packed his stuff up and he skedaddled out of there. And that was it. We had our house back to ourselves. And he came back once to do a little finishing work. And we have not had anybody back since. And we've got more work to be done, but it has been a relief. So obviously, sometimes these things can get really difficult, these kind of gaps that we have. But we can say that anything that doesn't conform to our ideas about what should be happening in these moments are going to create that, can create that dharma of inconvenience, that sankhara dukkha. Maybe it's an emotion that just feels unpleasant and feels unwanted, or our sense of self, how we define our ego. You know, we want it to be a different way, or the people that we care most about. There's just a moment that doesn't conform. So often, all these moments of things not conforming, you know, we just had an ice storm here in Nashville. And now I will say this, you know, we were prepared. We knew it was going to be about a week. So we got a lot of food, and we had, we were totally prepared. We had heat. We had everything we needed to care for our needs. And I must say, that's the most important thing. It was not an inconvenience. I enjoyed the snow. Everything was great. But then as it started dragging on, we had, just as the roads were starting to melt and we were able to get out, we had another little, a bit of ice come down. And the ice created a slick over the road, and my car, which was at the bottom of a steep driveway, actually slid out into the middle of the road. And so my husband found it sitting in the middle of the road. And so he had to very carefully back it back in. And then we were stranded for multiple more days. That's when it started to become inconvenient. That first week was great. Everything was conforming to the idea of how the snow should be, everything would be great. But then that last little bit, and it started to be inconvenient. And that's where the suffering started to come. But when I saw it, it's like, oh, there it is. It's not conforming. And then coming back and then letting that gap get smaller and smaller until it was okay again. And then it finally melted, of course. Everything changes. And of course, as we know, the beauty of impermanence, the suffering, there's suffering in impermanence, and there's beauty in impermanence, because also bad things end, suffering ends, everything is impermanent. But I also want to talk a little bit about when tragedy can be inconvenient, and not in the way we normally think. And this is one that I've talked about before at another group, and it's a hard thing for me to say, but usually this is the thing people appreciate that I share. And so what happened for me is that both of my parents died when I was a teenager, and my grandmother raised me after my parents died. And so then as I became an adult, I cared for her, you know, so I stayed, I lived with her, I cared for her. And she reached a point where she wasn't, I was working and she wasn't able to be in the house by herself. So put her in a care facility. And she declined pretty quickly once she was in that care facility. And I got a call one late one night from a nurse. And the nurse said, I think your grandmother may die tonight. And if you want to be with her when she dies, you need to come now. And so as I hung up the phone, I thought, this is really inconvenient. I remember very clearly that thought, this is inconvenient. And I turned over and I went to sleep. Now, she didn't die that night. She died the next night. I went to see her the next day and she died the next night, but I still wasn't there. And for so many years, I lived in shame and I lived in heartbreak and self-blame about having not gone and having looked at it as inconvenience. But the truth was, as I began to do therapy and I began to understand what was really going on, what I understood was that because both my parents died in very traumatic ways when I was growing up, that I had a great deal of trauma around death that I had not worked with yet. And so when I was called and said my grandmother was dying, that activated my trauma. And so when my rolling over and saying this is inconvenient, it was the tamping down of all of that trauma because I couldn't face it. I could not face her death. And so it was only through the process of coming to terms with those losses and that trauma that I was able to finally forgive myself and finally make peace with what happened. And so it wasn't inconvenient. It was trauma, but it showed up as inconvenience. And so sometimes it's a deeper place to look. And so in this case, that's what happened. And so a lot of times when we get put out of our expectations, it's something we're holding. Maybe we think we need something we can't easily address. And just as this happened with my grandmother. And we could say much of our ordinary life presents itself as inconvenience or trouble or difficulty caused to our personal requirements for comfort or ego fulfillment. And yet, if we look deeper, we can look at our expectations. It's interesting now, if you go to meditation retreats, some of you have been practicing for a long time. You know, when I started sitting, and this was over 30 years ago now, we would do meditation retreats in people's houses. And we would sleep on people's, you know, these old war stories, you know, we'd sleep on people in people's living rooms, you know, and they would just, you'd get a sleeping bag and you'd be sleeping with a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, for me, I didn't like it. And I would slip away into the meditation hall quietly and put a couple of zabutons together and make myself a little bed. But, you know, that was just kind of part of doing a retreat. It wasn't for me an inconvenience, but now we have much more luxurious retreats. And if anything is too rustic, for many people, it becomes an inconvenience. And I remember on a retreat form that we had filled out for feedback, we asked, you know, how were the facilities? And the person wrote, I'm not here for comfort. I'm here for the Dharma. It's like inconvenience is okay if I'm going to be here to meet the Dharma. And so this person, I loved his answer. It was like, yes, this is a nice answer. And so then the question is, how do we meet inconvenience with equanimity? You know, taking it in stride. And if not taking it in stride, then noticing the mind, the gap, the second noble truth of suffering. I mean, obviously, we're not going to take everything in stride, and often we do need to act to change things. Equanimity isn't passivity. You know, sometimes we have to speak out, sometimes we have to take action, but we can also have equanimity in the midst of that. And, you know, we could even say that impermanence is inconvenient. You know, we want that predictability to know how things will be. And yet, this teaching is that inconvenience is one of our greatest teachers. It's going against the mind grain. And I think part of the practice then is to really be aware of the seeking and clinging mind, the mind that is seeking for things other than the way they are right now. Or notice the self or the I that demands things to be a certain way. Maybe you demand yourself to be a certain way and then you're let down. Or teachings, you know, sometimes teachings, if we're not careful, teachings can seem to imply that we're just doing life wrong. We're not quite getting it right. And maybe it's just a moment away, but it's elusive. You know, but what is the entry point back into the moment that also acknowledges that we don't have to just get it all right, that this is just the messiness of life, and we can meet it with compassion. We can meet the parts of ourselves that feel disconnected or incomplete or inconvenience or whatever is arising. So getting to know that terrain of groundlessness, discomfort, inconvenience. I remember one of my early teachers said, it's my job to make it inconvenient for you. It's my job to pull the rug out from under your feet. And that's the teaching. That was a teaching. And so I think making friends with inconvenience, or at least being aware of it when it happens, can help us to find a way to navigate it a little more clearly. And sometimes that stress and that anxiety that starts to build up in the body from that little dissonance, you know, we have a chance to meet it, to develop a relationship with it, and even open the circumference of what we think of as our practice to recognize and to hold the truth of inconvenience and impermanence, and then holding that and then finding the way to navigate it in a way that allows us to be awake in the midst of it. And I do want to just share one thing before I close, because I think this just kind of, I like to balance when we talk about suffering. Sometimes there are moments of unexpected wonder and joy and good fortune that come through the door. And sometimes receiving that, it's like the opposite of inconvenience. It's an unexpected joy. And something that happened to me last year, it was a very difficult year for many reasons, including the house situation and our contractor went bankrupt. We had a lot of big inconveniences. But what happened was that out of the blue, I got a call from somebody at Vanderbilt University. Before I was a Dharma teacher, I was a full-time visual artist. And so I got a call from a curator, art curator at Vanderbilt, and said, do you have any lotus paintings? And I said, well, yeah, I do have some lotus paintings. And she said, well, you know, we had this grant and we want lotus paintings and wondered if you could sell us your lotus paintings. Well, yes. I mean, you know, I had lotus paintings in my closet and I hadn't been showing in such a long time. And so they bought four of my lotus paintings, and it was such a joy that it came out of the blue. And Vanderbilt University is a large institution that has wonderful places to put art. And back when I was an artist, one of my intentions as an artist was to use my art to bring any kind of joy or peace or healing that I could to people that were suffering. That was my intention as an artist. And so I sold my art to a lot of institutions, but I had never sold it in my own hometown. And so one of the paintings that they bought from me was placed in the main entrance, the waiting room in the medical center, a big lobby. And a few months ago, I got an email from somebody I know who said, you know, my husband was in the hospital for heart surgery, and I saw your painting on the wall. And she said, it brought me peace. And that was what my intention was. I'd forgotten that. But when she wrote that to me, it really touched my heart. And receiving that joy and that gratitude was the opposite of the expectation that I held or inconvenience. It was just the joy that came through the door. And so I think that joy, there's happiness too. And I just like to kind of put an end to the talk with bringing that into, and to, I was able to open my heart and receive her joy and to see how that had come full circle. So I think I'll close the talk there. And I believe we have a few minutes for anybody who would like to share, offer any comments or questions. Yes, let's see, Mary.
Yeah. So you're talking about inconvenient. So one retreat at Spirit Rock, I was the veggie chopper. And I unfortunately have the gene where cilantro tastes like ivory soap. And I got to, there was all these beautiful veggies I got to chop. It was lovely. Oh, this is going to be so good. And for some reason, they had cases of cilantro. Cases of cilantro. I mean, boxes of cilantro. And they were got chopped up. And I had to just laugh because I said, I know that it's going to end up, I'm not cooking it. And I mean, I would walk in there and I would just watch myself, look at the ingredients. And like one time it was like they had cilantro in every single dish on the thing. And it was so funny because I mean, there's a part of me that knew, but then the other part of me was like, I mean, inconvenience, just, it was like, I was disappointed. And I'm on retreat. So it was just really interesting to watch myself go, it's like this. Mm-hmm. It's like this. And they have a simple table, but it was so funny because that was a retreat where I really got to be so present during, especially the noon meal. And I actually think that sometimes for me, it becomes important to have a sense of humor when it's that kind of, you know, minor disappointment kind of thing, that like somebody said, they thought the sense of humor should be one of the paramis. And I think, yeah, so that was good. Yeah. But there's so many, I mean, it's right. It's insidious in the course of your day, how those little things just kind of like, oh. Yeah. Thank you for the talk. It was great.
Well, thank you. And by the way, I can empathize because I have over the years developed that same situation with cilantro. I used to love it. And now I'm like, ah. So I get that one. Thanks for sharing that. See, Alice?
Hi, thank you. I really appreciate that you came from your heart. It was really sweet. Thank you.
Okay.
That's just a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa, for a great talk. It was really interesting to watch those inconveniences that come up and in our daily life, and you know, to stay present with those and bring equanimity to those moments. It's really sometimes a challenge, but it's part of the Dharma. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Let's see, Carolyn.
Yes. Thank you, Lisa. That was a wonderful talk. And I really appreciate the gift of the word inconvenience. Somehow that resonates And I really appreciate it. It's given me much to reflect on. Thank you.
Welcome. Let's see. Do we have somebody else that raised their hand? Okay, Margaret.
Hi. I appreciate you, everybody who hung in from different time zones. I know it's late there. And then also I wanted to say how much I appreciated bringing in that other unexpected potential of inconvenience. I can relate to that. And, I've kind of been in the situation, it seems like, since COVID, that in general I've been able to sort of have a relaxed enough life that that I don't have to be so inconvenienced. But anyway, I have experience. I know about the joy of something else happening to that needs attention. Anyway, I really appreciate that you took the time and had the mindfulness to represent that.
Okay, thank you.
Alice has her hand up.
Sorry, no, I shouldn't have it. I don't know how that happened. I should lower my hand. I had it. Sorry.
That's okay. Thanks. Yeah, Patty?
Hi, thank you so much. That was a beautiful and inspiring talk. I wanted to point out that inconvenience isn't always thrust upon us. Sometimes we invite it intentionally because it's not always convenient to do the right thing. Slowing down to help someone in need is not convenient. Or making choices for a diet that doesn't match everyone else's, but we're taking care of ourselves and the world isn't always convenient. And making time for people who need us isn't always convenient. So sometimes we bring the inconvenience on ourselves. It's not just what we bump up against arbitrarily in life. But in both situations, I love that you pointed out the ability for equanimity to show itself, even in the midst of inconvenience. That was beautiful. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, Patty, for sharing that. And you're absolutely, that's a really good way, another angle to bring in is, yes, when we cultivate intention in this life, then yes, we have to be inconvenienced and that's a great point. And something I did, you know, there's a beautiful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh that I heard at the end of the year, and it was a chant that they do at Plum Village. And it's, I vow to bring joy to one person in the morning, I vow to alleviate the grief of one person in the afternoon. And I thought that was so beautiful. And I made this intention to, I may not be able to do both every day because I don't necessarily know people that are grieving every, but I vow to bring joy to one person every day. And I started to, and you know, I realized that I had to do something that wasn't always convenient, you know, to take those little, you know, I do it in a bigger way, but to do those everyday actions, the things I might overlook, it takes extra effort. And like you said, it's a little bit inconvenient, but more than worth it. So thank you for adding that point. That's a really good point.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions? If not, we can go to our meta.
See, we had Jan P.
Yes, I wanted to thank you for softening dukkha. I've loved that it's not always suffering. In the terms of the Western view of suffering, it doesn't have to be so huge and horrible. It can be really inconvenient. And I appreciate that softening to give us a broader view of what suffering can be, and also inconvenient joy. I love that. The unexpected, suddenly and unexpectedly.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.